Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
All right, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Mark Sitko. This is Next Fan Up. We are the podcast by the fans, for the fans. The basic bit is that we have 32 super fans, one from each team. We are led by our humble leader, Pod Vader, who is also a secret, you know, Patriots fan, not all too secret. And yes, we do shows twice a week now that the season is starting. And please join us. You can follow us at Next Fan Up. If you type that into Facebook or on Twitter, we are at NFU Podcast. Is that correct, guys? Is that the Twitter handle at NFU Podcast? I believe so. I will look that up and fix that if it is not correct. Great. Please follow us and check out the show as much as you can. Subscribe through iTunes. We are there. Like I said, you can get it twice a week. We're going to be coming out of every week Sunday nights with the show for Mondays, and then Thursday afternoons they'll be recording. I'm sure the show will be up Thursday evenings. For this show, my name is Mark Sitko. I am the Eagles super fan. I am joined today by two other super fans. We have Ron, who is the Dolphins super fan. Ron, go ahead and say hi.
How's it going, guys?
Awesome. Welcome. Ron can be followed at on Twitter. He is at Unsquished the Fish, and that is the name of his podcast. Ron, tell us a little bit about that. What is this podcast you do? Where can we find it?
You can go find it in iTunes, Stitcher, or you can stream it at unsquishedthefish.libsyn.com, but you can find all the links on Twitter at unsquishedthefish. I've been doing it now since May and starting to get a little bit of a thing, and I do tweets on some places and whatnot. It's a lot of fun. I'm having a blast doing it.
That's great, man. Yeah, and I'm sure as the season picks up, right, it's going to be great. You'll be able to do a lot more. You know, I'm sure, like, the fans will pick up as well. It is now time for us, like, as we'll see on this podcast, that we will, like, yeah, the listeners should be pouring in. Football is finally here, guys. There was a real football game today. Two professional teams went out on a field and played each other. It is like real football. I'm so excited. The other super fan who was with me today is Charlie. He is the 49ers super fan. Charlie, how you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you guys?
Doing good. You can follow Charlie on Twitter at TheCharlieSmith. He spells Charlie Charly. So follow him at TheCharlieSmith. That's awesome, Charlie. Welcome so much. As we've talked about before, I am so sorry for your offseason, man. It is almost like nightmarish, the amount of retirements. And we'll get to eventually with tonight with Alden Smith and so many things. I feel for you, buddy. But as we get started tonight, let us start off by talking about this game that we're excited about, the Hall of Fame game. We have the Vikings playing Pittsburgh. Neither of those super fans could join us tonight, unfortunately. But the game is almost halfway over, or a little more than halfway over as we're recording this. Bridgewater looked great. As I pull up the stats here, I see Bridgewater was 5 for 6 for 44 yards. He looked very sharp. Our Steelers superfan, Greg, sent in some things he was looking about in the game. And so I just wanted to go over these things real quick. First, he was saying Bud Dupree. He said he's been getting a lot of praise from the beat writers, but I would like to see how he looks in a real game. First-round picks are always a focus on the early preseason, and he could be starting by midseason if he continues his pace. I was kind of curious. I watched a little bit, and I didn't see anything flash. We're so eager to see what happens in these games, and unfortunately, in the first preseason game, they get one drive, and they're gone. So I'm sorry, Greg. I watched for that for you, and I couldn't tell you anything about Bud Dupree. But the other thing you wanted to see was watching your secondary. And you say, Greg, I'm quoting here, there's a lot of opportunity this season for playing time from guys who will get a lot of time in this game. I'm excited to see Kevin Fogg, cornerback, who is a long shot to make the roster. Now, as an Eagles super fan, I have seen Boykin play a lot. We call him the Boy King, and there was very much an all hail, long live the Boy King in Philly. He was very much beloved. Unfortunately, he's a little small. He's only 5'9", about 185, and so he doesn't really fit what the Eagles are trying to do specifically on defense. Specifically, Chip Kelly has the saying, big people beat up little people, and it's really apparent in the third year as you look at Chip Kelly. roster. There are very few players under 6 feet. If you are, you better be one of the toughest SOBs, like a little Sproles, if you're going to play that position. So Boykin really was just an odd man out. He was in his last year of his contract. He wasn't going to sign again with us. And so I think because he wants a chance to play on the outside and start. And so I think it worked out for the best of both worlds. We got a fourth round pick if he plays 60% or more next year. They get somebody who can start on the outside in a cover two, because he'll always have safety help over the top. And I think he's going to make plays just tonight. I think you'll be excited, Greg. I'm sure you saw this. They were on a third down. Boykin comes running in from the slot on a blitz. He jumps up and bats a pass. End of drive. They kick the ball. I mean, you're going to see plays like that all the time. The thing I love about Boykin that is really underrated, he is an incredible gunner. I guess that's what they call it, a gunner on punts, but especially punts on a short field. He will run down and stop many balls within the 10, even within the 5. He's the best player I've ever seen on the Eagles doing that. So I was really bummed to see Boykin go. I think he already, in his first Steelers game, was making plays. I think you're going to love the guy. And then the other thing you mentioned was backup QBs, Landry Jones. You say he's getting kind of his last shot, and you wanted to see how he did. He was 11 for 21, 106 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. But he was out there. He's playing with the first team, and he seemed to do all right. Guys, do you have any other impressions about this game, Ron or Charlie? Any thoughts? Did you have anything you saw in this game that you wanted to talk about or mention?
I just thought with Teddy going into the Niners' first game, week one, looked crisp. Definitely seemed like he was really going to a check down and to the quarterback or the tight end. Sorry, can't remember. Rudolph. Rudolph seemed to be a very good connection there for those two.
I think Teddy Bridgewater is going to be a real good quarterback real fast in this league. I think he's exciting. I think it's interesting how much ridiculousness was made about his pro day, and everybody just kind of wrote him off, even though he got drafted. And it really probably hurt his draft stock, but he got drafted late, and I thought it was a great grab by Minnesota to jump up and get him over Houston in the draft. And I really think that Minnesota, with that defense, they could be a surprise, honestly. I'm not the Minnesota, but I could say that they look at like an interesting team, to say the least.
Are they the team of this? We were talking about before this, when we were off the air, as just the super fans chatting before we started the show, we were talking about how there's always the teams that everyone thinks is going to be horrible and they end up not being horrible, which we were kind of joking, maybe that's the Niners this year. And then there's also the teams people think are going to be great and then they fall apart. Is this the team that people think is going to be the big underdog team? And do they really come together? Obviously, with Adrian Peterson there, I mean, Bridgewater has got a lot to lean on. He's not going to be expected to carry that team. And as you said, the defense is getting stronger. Are they going to be that team? What do you think, Charlie?
I feel like they're still a year away. Another year with Mike Zimmer's defense to be installed and him, being able to influence the draft. I feel like they're another year away from being just really gangbusters. But I can see them taking a step forward, being a 9-7, 10-6 team, maybe just barely missing the playoffs. But, I feel like when we talk about that, it's also a team that, that's really good, that could step back. And, I really feel like it's either going to be the Seahawks or the Packers. But on the Vikings, I think they're one more year away for being a real gangbusters team.
So let's talk about the top of the NFC East, right? Like you mentioned, obviously, I think that those two teams have to be first off the tongue. Packers and Seahawks are the two best teams right now we should think of in our conference. But if we move past that, what other teams are up there, right? Dallas is expected to be good, I would say, is one of those teams. The Eagles get talked about. I don't know if we're one of those teams people think they have to beat in order to take the NFC. But is there anybody else who's really at the top right now? What other teams are up there?
The Arizona Cardinals are thought to be by a lot of the, people in the media. Honestly, I'm not high on the Cardinals, but a lot of people are. So, they would be kind of like your 2A team there. The Falcons. I know Pod Vader's all crazy about them. I don't see it either. I don't know who's your NFC team, after those two.
Yeah. And what's interesting about those two teams, the one team that's obviously, I think, the most complete is Seattle. They have a very strong defense. They have playmakers on offense, especially that running back, Marshawn Lynch and Russell Wilson. I mean, and now that they have Graham, to me, that is a really frightening team. Lots of combinations. They can beat you lots of ways. The Packers have, I think, the best quarterback in the league, but I, you know, there's other flaws with that team. That team is not perfect. It's just he is so good that he really can push them and will them into situations. I don't even see another team close. I think everyone else, it really is like gaping holes. I can point, it's including the Eagles. I can right away point to major, major holes. And I think if the NFC is stronger, but how is it in the AFC? What do you think, Ron? Who are the juggernauts? Obviously, I think we're going to talk about the Pats, but I'd love to hear what your thoughts are with them. And is there any other team that would be up there?
I think that Colts for sure. I tell you what, I mean, if they could get the quarterback situation figured out as Houston, is that I mean, you sit down and look at that defensive line with Vince Wilfork, and if Clowney can come back and be something, I mean, I'm all about bagging on the Dolphins defensive line, especially. Now, because it was already a pretty good, and the Bills have a good line. The Jets, maybe with Richardson suspension now, and who knows how long he'll be out. But I wonder if Houston's a team that could kind of pop up out of nowhere and maybe do something this year.
Dolphins yeah. are looking very good, from what I hear. Following you on your Twitter.
Oh yeah, I'm. thanks. Wow, thank you. Yeah, I'm definitely excited about my Fins, but I was trying not to be just all, you know, Fins. I can point to several. I think we're going to be win team this year. Just kind of thinking outside of that, I look at Houston too as another team, and the Bills again another team if they could figure out the quarterback situation. And at this point, as a Dolphins fan, I'm glad they really haven't figured out, and hope they don't figure out the quarterback situation. They have a good defense. Obviously, they have a good attack. They've got LeSean McCoy now, and they've got a coach who likes good defense and to run the ball. It's a good fit for them as well. And they won 9 games last year. I think a lot of people realize that they were close last year, and they did it with horrible quarterback play. So they're a team in our own division that scare me.
Yeah. I mean, I don't – Rex Ryan, I mean, Buddy Ryan is the reason that I'm a coach. I'm a fan. As a kid, watching Buddy Ryan's teams was – it made me fall in love with football, the way that he had his teams playing. And Rex is very similar. When I watch Rex coach, especially his defense, that is the kind of football I want to see. I want to see something that is surprising and violent and dominant. And he knows how to do that. I think that the Bills are going to be better. So, I mean, if they won 9 last year and they were on the brink, I could easily see them getting in this year. And your division is going to be real interesting. I just, for the first time hearing you talk, I realized that your two divisions are kind of the cousin divisions or sibling divisions in each conference. Both really defense-heavy teams and some great coaches. And, you know, really what separates the team is, like, where is the quarterback, right? Like, what kind of a quarterback do you have, and how strong are they? And I think both divisions are probably going to be, as expected, the Super Bowl contending divisions. Yeah, that is interesting. The Niners, as long as they don't fall apart. Charlie, I'll just give you a chance right now. Tell us a little bit about this offseason. Yeah, before we get into these Hall of Fame players, I want to talk about – tell me about how this has been. I'm so sorry, like I said, for you, feeling for a fan as you watch half of your defensive team retire. And now with Alden Smith's situation, if you want to get into that, please tell us about it. How's everything going?
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, having our awesome coach who, you know, the entire fan base has just been behind, you know, everyone says who's got it better than us. And, you know, to lose Harbaugh was horrible. And then, you know, the very next, you know, within that month, you know, we're going through our coaching search, and we got all these coaches that are, you know, going to other teams because they don't feel like, you know, they're going to be able to be around in San Francisco very long. So, you know, we get kind of settled into a D-line coach that's been on our team for ages. And then, you know, all of a sudden all these players retire. Patrick Willis retires, Justin Smith retires. Chris Borland just comes out of nowhere and retires. Anthony Davis retires. And then guess what? We get past all of that. Training camp opens. Everything is starting to look positive again. People are smiling. You know, practices are going well. Pads come out. Then we take a day off. On Thursday, we took our day off. Alden Smith to tie a couple back. And the very next day, that night, of course, he gets arrested for suspicion of a DUI and vandalism. And then, within about 4 hours of him getting released, the Niners had cut him. So all of a sudden, all that positivity is gone, and so we got to go back through it all over again. Okay, what are we going to do to recover for his position on top of everything else? So, yeah, very, very troubling offseason. And like I said on our Slack, if your team loses to the Niners after this offseason, you should probably start playing football.
Yeah, man. It makes me sad. Like, Alden Smith is such a force. And anytime you see someone like that throwing it away, it's just such a shame. And especially on that team where some people are deciding to walk away to have somebody who's like, would want to play and he's messing it up. Ugh, just makes you sad, man. How do you think, if I had to say right now, what's your team going to be? What's the record? How are you guys doing this year?
You know, honestly, we talked about it on our NFC West preview podcast. You can check, I believe that was middle of July. I thought we'd be a 10-6 team. I felt like, maybe we could backdoor ourselves into a wild card. Losing Alden Smith, in my opinion, is two games that we will lose now. So I'm going to say that's an 8-8 team. But can Aaron Lynch step up? Can Eli Harold step up? Who knows? If those guys can do the same thing that Alden did, which he was the fastest player in NFL history to reach 30 sacks. Happened in 27 games. Not many people are going to be able to even get close to that. So
no,
it's
going
to be
tough
shoes to fill, that's for sure.
Yeah. Speaking of Harbaugh, I'm just curious, are there stories coming out of how the players responded to Harbaugh going? I mean, are they all just quickly moving on and realizing, just shut up and keep your head down? Or is there a sentiment that the players feel that, like, they got screwed out of this great coach they had?
Well, in talking about that, the only sentiment I can really think of is that Michael Crabtree said when he left that, the coaching just wasn't there, which all that is just Crabtree leaving because no one would give him a contract. He was on the free agent wire for 30 days and finally had to take a prove-it deal with Oakland. So I don't take much credence to that. Majority of the players have came out and said that they love Tom Sula and that it's just a breath of fresh air. And like I said, that happened in OTAs and, during training camp as well. And you can take it for what it is. Everything's positive this time of year. But, there was really a lot of positivity building there in Santa Clara until that Alden Smith incident. Cam Inman, which is one of the Niners beat reporters, said that he saw the players exiting from a meeting after the morning after the Alden Smith news broke. And whereas usually everyone was jovial and excited and everything, everyone was solemn and there was not a smile on any guy's face when they left that meeting room. So that's a big thing there, losing a talent like that. And it alters everyone's season. When you think you're going to have a good season, then you lose a potential Hall of Fame player, that's a big deal.
Yeah. Who do you think takes your division? If you guys are at 8-8 at the end, who's above you? Where do you guys fall? Are you going to be second? Are you going to be third at 8-8? Where are you going to fall in that division?
Well, if we end up being 8-8, it's probably going to be third. Honestly, a lot of people don't feel this way, but I feel like the Cardinals are going to take a step back and the Rams are going to take a step forward. But the Seattle wins this division, regardless of taking a step back or not. I feel like they're still primed to win it.
Can the Rams get into a plus? Can they become a winning team? Can they break 500 and get into a 9-10 wins?
If they don't, Jeff Fisher better. Yeah. I honestly, I don't think so. We played the Eagles last year with Foles, and if it wasn't for that running game, he would just be horrible. And that great coaching there. You could definitely attest to it on that fourth down throw. That was bad.
I live here, and so I watched that with a bunch of Niners fans, and oh man, just a depressing day. That was just not, we couldn't do anything. If it was not for our special teams, we had nothing, no offensive power whatsoever.
Well, you had a pick six and a punt return and a kick return, right? For touchdowns?
Yeah.
Yeah. The only time that's ever happened.
Nothing. Yeah. Oh. But just unreal, man. Just so bad. So, yeah, do you think the Rams, like you mentioned Fisher. So you think he, like, would you say a hot seat, not to use like some, you know, cheesy term? Yeah, definitely. There's certain coaches, him, and I would love to hear Simon's thoughts on this, but Marvin Lewis, I'm like, how do these dudes coach for like, they have careers like Belichick, but they never win. I'm like, I understand how Belichick is a coach in the same place for 12 years. I don't understand how Marvin Lewis has been a coach for 12 years. I'm just like, I don't get it. Why? How do you not get fired? I don't get it. And the other one is definitely, you know, the other one that I watch is Fisher. I get it with the Titans. What he did with the Titans is amazing. But I haven't seen it since then. And is he still like riding on the, you know, that was 10 years ago what he did with the Titans. Is that still like his bread meal ticket? He's also, from what I understand, like Jeff Fisher is like a hardcore old school football guy. And I think people love that kind of dude, just being around and talking to him and everything. But for a league that is supposed to be so results oriented, I'm sometimes amazed. Like in Philly, you would never last that long. You have one off season and you're gone. I mean, they freak out. They'll like literally come and like burn your house down, like make you get out of that city.
I mean, if crazy. They could pelt Santa Claus, they're going to take out your coach.
Yeah. And they'll just, I mean, the beat writers too, it's like this whole conspiracy thing. They will trash you so hard. It's like, yeah, you better leave. It's not even worth it. But fascinating. Dolphin, just to go back real quick, just to give you a chance as well. What's your record at the end of this year? And where do you think you fall in your division?
I think we're 10-6. And I think that puts us in a wild card spot. I still feel like the Pats probably win this division, even with Brady's suspension, which I'm not even sure if he's really going to get suspended, but I guess that way. And even has taken a lot of hits as far as personnel, like a mass exodus from their backfield. And even Pod Vader and Patrick are kind of freaking out about their defense. Belichick would figure it out. If it was something to be freaked out about, Belichick would have freaked out something. So, I think they win that wild card at 10-6 wild card spots.
Yeah. The people definitely that I see, it seems to me last year that really benefited from a single player that just changed everything for them was Revis for the Patriots and DeMarco Murray for the Cowboys. These two teams that had really been struggling to kind of be dominant, all of a sudden with one player added, the right piece, Belichick was able to take Revis and be like, all right, that half of the defense is covered. Now I'm just going to do my magic on the other half, and then Brady's going to cover the offense. And yeah, it's amazing sometimes what a single player can do for a team. I think for the Eagles, it really depends on Bradford. If Bradford plays well and he doesn't, you know, his ACLs don't snap like twigs, I think he has a chance that we could go 11-5, you know, maybe win a playoff game. But if we're back to Sanchez, I think we're back to an 8-8 team, and, you know, we'll see what can happen. I think all of us are in for very interesting seasons. And I think, Charlie, you're going to be better than people think. You're being optimistic, though. I see that even 8-8, 10-6, as you talked, is optimistic compared to – I have another friend who's a Niner fan, and he's saying 3-13, which is just, oh, breaks my heart. That would be so sad. So let's talk about some of these Hall of Fame players, guys. We had 8 guys inducted into the Hall of Fame. I'm just going to read over their names, tell you a little bit about where they played, not get too detailed about them, and then we'll get a chance to kind of talk about these guys and what we think of this class. We have Jerome Bettis, the Bus. He played in Los Angeles for the Rams from 93 to 95. Then he played from 96 to 2005 in Pittsburgh. We have Tim Brown, who played for the Oakland Raiders and also for Tampa Bay. We have Charles Haley. Charles played for the San Francisco 49ers and the Dallas Cowboys. He's the only player, Charlie will talk about this, but Charles Haley is the only player to ever win 5 Super Bowls. He has 5 Super Bowl rings. He can't even wear them all in one hand without putting a ring on a thumb. Very, very impressive. Bill Polian. Bill was contributing with the Kansas City, Buffalo, Carolina, and Indianapolis. I'm not sure. I don't know his whole career. I don't know if he had the same roles with each of those teams, but he's behind the scenes with Kansas City, Buffalo, Carolina, and Indianapolis. He built 3 different teams that went to the Super Bowl. Junior Seau played for San Diego from 90 until 2002, and then he played in Miami from 2003 to 2005, and then he played in New England from 2006 to 2009, a 19-year career. I mean, just ridiculous, incredible player. Will Shields played for Kansas City from 93 to 2006. Amazing that he played for one team. Mick Tinglehoff played again for one team, 1962 to 1978. That is before free agency, so it makes more sense. And then we have Ron Wolf. And Ron was with, and this is also Ron, yeah, helped build the Raiders franchise that won 9 division titles. He's from 63 to 74, 79 to 89 with the Raiders. He also spent some time in the 70s with Tampa Bay, in the 90s with the Jets, and then the entire, like, rest of the 90s with Green Bay. So, yeah, looking at these players, guys, Charlie, I'll start with you, with Charles Haley. What do you want to tell us about this amazing player? And, you know, just amazing, this sport, right, where we have every team has 50 players. There are hundreds and thousands of players every year, and we induct 8 that go into the Hall of Fame. Truly a special mark. Tell us a little bit about Charles Haley.
Well, Charles Haley was just an amazing pass rusher. You know, he was drafted in 86 by the Niners, and, you know, was on the team until 91. And, you know, Charles was definitely an interesting guy. You know, towards the end of his tenure with the Niners, he was so despondent over Ronnie Lott being traded to the Raiders the year before. You know, as free agency and the Niners started to get older, they got rid of some of their bigger players. Well, Lott was kind of the guy in the locker room that was able to rein in Charles Haley. You know, a lot of people didn't really know. You know, Haley was so under the radar, but everyone in the locker room knew he was just crazy. Well, after this game where the Niners lost to the Oakland Raiders, they might have been the LA Raiders at that point, but you know, Charles Haley was inside the locker room, freaking out, throwing stuff. You know, finally, one of the 49ers equipment guys went over to the visiting locker room and grabbed Ronnie Lott, you know, out of the shower to come and calm Charles Haley down. And, you know, Ronnie Lott was able to come in there and finally get, you know, Charles to calm down. But that, you know, that's what it took, you know, and the guy was an amazing player, but he had all these issues, you know. And so if we get into kind of projecting forward to his pupil, whom he kind of helped counsel, you know, this last offseason, being Alden Smith, you know, I look at, you know, Charles and Alden's careers very close, but you know, Haley didn't have the arrest record. Well, let's put you know, Alden Smith 25 years, you know, in the past. Is he still playing football? In my opinion, yes, because there's no Twitter. You know, if a local precinct arrests a player, they probably take him to team headquarters rather than to jail. So, you know, and none of that stuff is a big deal, you know. So in my opinion, it's because you know, of some of our great technology that Alden Smith had, you know, this unfortunate deal where he got cut, you know, and that's what ended up happening to Haley in San Francisco. So Charles Haley had a very, very big confrontation with George Seifert, and then actually a physical fight with Steve Young. And then the crowning accomplishment that finally got Carmen Policy and Eddie DeBarlo to sign off on a trade was he peed on a teammate's car. So after that, they shipped him over to Dallas, and that's where Charles won his last three you know, Super Bowls, and over the Niners in those early 90s NFC Championship games. So, mm-hmm. You know, definitely Eddie D and Carmen Policy regretted letting go of Charles Haley and wished that they could help them more. That's one of the reasons why the Niners, you know, the Jed York being Eddie D's, you know, nephew, that's the reason why the Niners stuck with Alden Smith after he wrapped his car around a tree in 2013, I believe, you know, and sent him to rehab and stuck with him. And, you know, they really wanted Alden to work, and it was because of that experience with Charles Haley. You don't want to let go of an all-time pass rusher and have him go to your division or to rival at that point, being the Cowboys, and then have to watch him win three Super Bowls. You know, so yeah. That was definitely a nice little, you know, parallel to those careers. You know, hopefully Alden gets the help he needs. You know, if you guys watch the Hall of Fame inductee or ceremony, I should say, Haley talked a lot about, you know, mental health and why, you know, his wife at the time, back in his second season in 88, told him that he's manically depressed. And, you know, Haley pushed against her and said, no, I'm not. And that was the reason why they're now exes. And, you know, at that point, you know, Haley's life just continued to spiral out of control. Like I said, if he was playing now, he would have never made it outside the Niners. He would have been cut and no one would have touched him. You know, it's just the league we live in now. So Charles Haley would have never made the Hall of Fame at that point. But, you know, I thought it was kind of interesting him talking about mental health. And, you know, I know this is probably a subject for another podcast, but, you know, when we talk about gun control and things like that, I think a lot of what we forget about as a society is really taking care of people, you know, their mental health, making sure they have the help they need. And, you know, like Tim Tomsula said during his speech when he, you know, after the Niners cut Alden Smith was, you know, no one is not worth it. He said, it's worth it to go get help. You are worth it, you know? And so if one person hears what Alden Smith went through and went and sought help because of it, then it helps shine a better light on this situation. So I thought that was great. I hope that a lot of people do kind of check their own actions and make sure that if they are having trouble, that they go out and get the help that they severely need, because truly we are worth it. And if you do, you know, you could curb an Alden Smith situation. You could curb a Charles Haley situation of him having to go to the dark side, you know, stuff like that. So definitely Charles Haley was a guy I loved watching growing up, you know, 100 sacks, 5 Super Bowls, 5 Pro Bowls. Definitely one of the best pass rushers that my mind ever lived.
Yeah, twice named NFC Defensive Player of the Year, man. I mean, just looking at looking at the list, it's impressive. 6 double-digit sack totals in an era when passing was just catching on. You know, we wasn't the era now where we're passing all the time. Yeah, very impressive, man. And I love the idea of forgiveness. You're kind of talking about this idea that, you know, with the modern age and the Twitter and everything, it's like we love to build these people up and tear them down. But especially when it comes to football, these are just kids. They're just people, you know, and like, yeah, they have problems that a lot of us have. And yeah, really, I like the way you said that, like, no one would touch him. Like, he would be cut and no one would touch him. And you're like, man, just what is forgiveness in this industry and in this country to like understand that, yeah, people make mistakes. And especially for me, if it's not violent, you know, if it's mistakes you're making to yourself, harming yourself, I have more, you know, sympathy than if I do someone who has harmed another. But yeah, man, really interesting. And I, you know, yeah, yeah. When you first started saying that, it was really interesting, Charlie, as you were talking about it, when you're first kind of going that way, I was like, ooh, that's an interesting angle to take. Cause you're like, oh, do these guys, you know, should we be soft hearted towards these guys? But by the end, I definitely was on your side of like, yeah, these are kids, and especially now as I get older and I realize that a lot of these people that are playing are in their 20s. And man, if I was held accountable for the worst mistakes I made in my 20s, whew, lordy, lordy. Ron, what do you think about Junior Seau? I don't know if you were prepared to talk about Junior at length, but, you know, he played for your team briefly. I know he is more known for his time in San Diego and even for his time with New England towards the end of his career because of such an amazing comeback. But yeah, is there anything you want to tell us about Junior Seau or talk about Junior Seau?
Still was a good contributor for us when he came. And of course, the defense was loaded with some talent. I mean, we had Patrick Surtain, Sam Madison, Jason Taylor, Zach Thompson. That defense definitely had some talent on it. And he fit in perfectly. It was just perfect. His skill set, and even though it had declined, and we got him in his 12th. It was just perfect for our team. He was energetic. He was exciting. I know a lot of Dolphins fans don't necessarily look kindly to him because he retired officially, unofficially, and then went to our rival New England. And many were happy that he didn't actually get the Super Bowl he was seeking, of course, in South Florida. But I don't think anybody really holds any ill will towards that, because when he was here, he was really good. I mean, he was amazing in his career of 56 sacks and 12 Pro Bowls and 18 interceptions at the linebacker position. He did it all. He deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yes, yes, I agree. I agree. And so tragic, his death and everything. It's just, it's such a shame. And obviously looking at how, yeah, how concussions are affecting these players. I think Junior is a perfect example of what we may have to really look at of how this, yeah. Really interesting questions to bring up of like how we look at these players and how off the field they are. And then just where we are, how it's been different from the past of how we look at the violence of the sport and what we expect of headbanging, crushing each other, where now the sport may be bending away from that as we're seeing concussions really hurt some of our best players. The two players that I just want to mention as well off this list, just because they were big superstars in my lifetime, Jerome Bettis and Tim Brown. The bus is just a staple, you know, bulldozer of a running back that I just think needs respect for what the type of running back, especially in the modern era that he was. We're seeing so much of the like slippery little scat backs and these guys who can catch the ball. Not that Bettis didn't have good hands, but, you know, we're less and less seeing those just monsters of men that just pound it down the middle. And Bettis was incredible at it and just, you know, really, really a remarkable player, had a very long career. And then Tim Brown, I honestly didn't watch Tim play a lot. He was kind of towards the beginning, you know, when I was very young. I'm more of an NFC player. But growing up in the Bay Area, Tim Brown was a household name before Jerry Rice even. Like, you know, they were both there, I guess, at the same time. But, yeah, I don't know how to say it. Just Tim Brown, you knew who Tim Brown was if you grew up in the Bay Area. Such a great receiver, so many milestones. Both just incredible guys. As we're kind of moving towards the end of the podcast, guys, one of the last things I wanted us to talk about today is the role of women in the league. We're kind of seeing a whole surgence for the first time. We're seeing women as coaches. We're seeing women on the field as refs. We would love to see a woman as a super fan, please. I think right now we're doing pretty good with the super fans. If you email us or tweet at us, we can tell you which super fan spots are open, but we would love to get some female super fans. If you are a woman and you would like to be a super fan and you love your team and you want to tell us about it, please. Yes, go on our Facebook page. Just look for Next Fan Up or tweet at us, NFU Podcast, and tell us that you are a super fan and you want to join. And I'm sure we would love to hear from you. That would be great. But talking about this, Ron, what are your thoughts on this with women in the league and where we're headed with this? What do you think?
Well, my first thought is our vice president of administration, Donna Ponte. I mean, she had quite a high role in the league itself. And I know that she worked for the Jets. She worked for Cleveland and was instrumental in that trade between Cleveland and the Jets that brought Sanchez over to the Jets. And I think she'd only been there like a week or two. And then when she came to Miami, she has been what they call actually known in the NFL as being somebody who ends the cap better than anybody. That's one of her strengths, one of her skills. She also negotiates contracts. I don't know if anybody could remember when the Dolphins were on Hard Knocks and you could hear Philbin in the phone saying Ryan Tannehill understand he's going to have to go to the draft if he doesn't sign with us. And he asked somebody, is he prepared to do that? And someone said, yes, that was actually Donna Ponte. Then on a lot of that contract issue was about those, a lot of the contract issues they had with Mariota this year, some of that secondary language. Originally, when the new CBA was signed, all these first through 15 picks were coming through fully guaranteed, no offset language. I believe Tannehill's contract was one of the first, if not the first, to have some bust protection offset language. And a lot of that came from Donna Ponte. Just an article was written last year about her. Possibly be the first female GM. I can't speak to her knowledge of player evaluation, but she definitely has done a lot of the things that to do with trades, to do with cap manipulation, a lot of the skills that a GM would have. So that should be interesting.
Amazing, yeah, to have a female GM. It's really exciting to me. I'm excited to see that and see this shift in the league. Any industry that I work in that I see that is like dominated by men, it's always nice to see the shift. I think any of that balance is always good. I am intrigued to see if we will someday have a female somehow on the field as a player. Who knows? This ref that we just got, I don't know a whole lot about her. But she has a pretty impressive resume of playing rugby and playing football. I think eventually it is maybe even possible. Or maybe we'll have a female league that is not some powder puff Victoria's Secrets joke, but actually women who want to play this game and obviously are skilled enough to play it. And, you know, it's such, yeah, it's a game that everyone should be able to play. It's as simple as that. It's a great game, and I think everyone should have a chance. So, guys, I think we're going to wrap up the show there. Thank you guys so much for being here. Again, we had Ron, the Dolphin Superfan. You can follow him at Unsquish the Fish. We also have Charlie. He is our Niner Superfan at the Charlie Smith, Charlie being spelled C-H-A-R-L-Y. We really appreciate you guys following us and listening to the podcast. Like I said, we're doing shows now every Sunday night and Thursday afternoon. We will be basically previewing and cover and reviewing every single weekend of football. We are here until the end. May the best super fan win. I mean, there's going to be some epic battles as we go talk about games going in and out of each week. Thank you guys so much for listening in this boring off season. We are finally here. Football is happening. It's a great time. Anything else, guys? Ron, Charlie, you guys want to say before we go?
I got something, though, I forgot to mention on Charles Haley's Hall of Fame speech. Uh-huh. Eddie DeBartolo needs to be in the Hall of Fame. There is no reason why he can't be. He's has presented five players, has, you know, been the owner for five Super Bowls. It's time to get the guy in the Hall of Fame. Let's do it, Hall of Fame crew.
Yeah, that's great. I appreciate that. I agree as well. Awesome, guys. Thank you so much. We are wrapping up now. We will be back in a couple days on Thursday. Thank you so much.
They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.